It's rumoured that when David Cameron left his office in 10 Downing Street for the last time, that he left three envelopes on the desk for his predecessor, with the word that said, "Open one of these each time you get into trouble." Apparently, when the negotiations with the European Union weren't going so well, Theresa May opened the first envelope, which said inside, "Blame your predecessor." When she lost her first Brexit vote in the House, she opened the second envelope. It said, "Do a cabinet reshuffle." I'm going to stop there until... I'm not getting a connection here. Let's turn it off again. Turn it on. Could I ask you, you're going to have to move it forward for me, I think. She opens the first envelope and it says, "Blame your predecessor." She has a Brexit problem. She opens the second envelope and it says, "Do a cabinet reshuffle." When she's clearly getting nowhere with Brexit, she opens the third envelope, which says, "Prepare three envelopes." It's not known how many envelopes she left for Boris Johnson. We face all kinds of anxiety in our lives, don't we? But we can't look at envelopes and gain the answers. And one of the great anxieties in society today, is it not, is about our well-being, about our nourishment, about our food. It may be that you're worried. Could you move it forward, please? Thank you. Your concerns may be you may go to the gym and work out. You may be very concerned about your well-being. You may be worried about food, the food you eat, the cost of food, a balanced diet, the amount of packaging, whether to buy local, whether to buy meat anymore. That despite our anxiety, the truth is, isn't it, that we enjoy eating. Well, we need to eat. We enjoy eating, and by and large, it does us good. And you know, food sits at the centre of this discussion that Susan read to us this morning. This was a poor region where Jesus was, and the Jews loved their food. And then they heard Jesus talking about hunger and thirst in this somewhat unusual way, their ears rather pricked up. He was making a comparison between their physical appetite and their spiritual appetite. And we're going to look at that comparison this morning in terms of two, can we move on, please? In terms of two words, filled and fulfilled. Because what Jesus was trying to say was that our physical appetites get filled. But he's offering something about our spiritual appetite, which can be fulfilled. And we're going to unpack that as we go through this morning. It's interesting, if you go through the scriptures, that God rather likes food. If you read the picture of creation in Genesis 1-2, it reads a bit like foodie heaven, doesn't it? With all the incredible range of plants and trees, which are described as pleasing to the eye and good for food. When Jesus saved the children of Israel in Egypt and led them out of slavery in Egypt, he said to them, "I want you to remember this, but not with a ceremony, with a meal." In Psalm 23, a place of blessing is described as a place where a table is prepared for you. Do you remember Jesus burst onto the public scene? He kept the wine flowing at a party, at a wedding. He gained public notoriety because he ate with the wrong kind of people. Later this morning, we're going to come round another meal. Jesus asked us to remember his love at what we call the Lord's table. And yet, back in Genesis, it's really interesting that that phrase, that which was pleasing to the eye and good for food, when God created his great provision for mankind, when we see man's selfishness erupt in chapter 3, that same phrase is used. When Eve saw that the fruit was good, pleasing to the eye and good for food. So what had happened was that God provided that which was good for nourishment and for wholesomeness and for feeding and health. And man very quickly stamped his intention to be selfish and to go his own way. It's interesting, isn't it? As the story of the people of Israel unfold, God provides again in the wilderness journey, giving them manna day by day and says, only take one day's ration. But some of the people hoarded it, and it stank the following morning when they did. They were misusing what God had given them. And of course, Jesus himself told food stories. He told the story of the man who built bigger and bigger barns, didn't he? Because he had more and more food that he could put into them. He talked about a man who sowed seed and about thorny and stony ground in which seed could not sow, could not grow. But here in chapter 6, he brings the matter to a head. And the context in chapter 6 between physical food and spiritual food is that picture of the 5,000. Ah, thank you. Look at that, wonderful. So Jesus had made it possible to feed 5,000 plus people. So having done that, the crowds are keeping an eye on him to see if he's going to repeat the trick. And he turns round to them and says, you know, you're only tracking me because your stomachs are full. You've had your fill and you want to have your fill again. Why don't you think beyond the food? And I wanted you to have food. That's good for you. But why not think beyond the food as to what it might mean? Because the food that I can give you beyond the physical food will never spoil, never go rotten. And they're thinking, ah, we know what he's talking about. He's going to do the Moses trick. Give us food day by day by day, just like God gave them in the wilderness. And they say again, even after further discussion with Jesus and him pointing away from the physical, away from the tactile, they say again, give us this food. And I was thinking, you know, what's the kind of modern equivalent of us being so absorbed with the physical and forgetting the bigger picture? Oh. Many of you might recognize this film scene. All is not going well in the professional or the romantic life of Bridget Jones. So she goes home, wraps herself in her favorite duvet, and eats an entire carton of ice cream. It's a scene that conveys the message, doesn't it? Food is going to help me get through this. But you know, who of us has not done something like that at some point or another? Who of us doesn't, in fact, self-indulge as a way of getting through with food or drink? Who of us has not thought deeply about going on a diet, changing the way we eat, and this, that, and the other. And none of that is wrong. It's when that becomes the major source of our nourishment, isn't it? It's when we're constantly taking the drink and constantly wrapping ourselves in the duvet, or whatever it is we do to get away from the stresses and strains of life and not look beyond that situation. God continues this dialogue. Jesus continues the dialogue in verse 32 and 35. He says, turn your eyes away from the physical and look at me. I am food. Crazy in his hand, I am the bread of life. Now, what happens? Oh, right, we're stuck again. What happens on a summer picnic or when we have a winter bowl of soup with friends at home? What happens when you have a drink in a cafe or a drink in the pub? Yes, you eat and drink, but there's something else going on, isn't there? In the banter, in the exchange of news and all that's going on, we're nourishing each other, aren't we? We're feeding off each other. Our relationships are developed because of those interactions, often around social occasions. They feed our relationship. And I think Jesus is saying this here when he's talking about the bread of life, that a relationship with him is nourishing, is wholesome, is transforming. A relationship with him is like no other. And I want to particularly look at this word fulfilling compared to the physical appetite being filled. What do you think of when you hear the word fulfill? Do you think of the legal idea that you need to fulfill the terms of your lease? Or do you think of, I need to go on that journey to fulfill my dream? That will fulfill me. Different ideas, but there's a sense, isn't there? Oh, we're back at the pub. Great. Thank you. Go back. Thank you. There is a sense, isn't there, where the sense of being fulfilled, yes, is completing or closing something, but also that wonderful sense of realizing new potential, isn't it? If you feel fulfilled, then yes, something has happened. You achieved something, maybe, but it's opened up a new horizon. It's opened up new expectations. It's given you new hope. And I want to look at just a couple of scriptures before we conclude that, to me, just confirm and expand what Jesus is saying about the relationship with him, about how it nourishes, about how it transforms. And Romans 8:4. So Jesus condemned sin in the flesh in order that the righteous requirement of the law might be fully met in us. That's a complex way of saying Jesus smashed the barriers between us and God. Jesus smashed the barriers between us and God, which means we now have a connection, a relationship with God. Do you know in chapter 4 of John, Jesus said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Do you know if you're in relationship with Jesus this morning, you are the finished article. No ifs and buts, no probationary period. You are the finished article. When Jesus came to earth, he came to finish the work of God by smashing the barriers between you and God. That is something we need to get our heads around. It's something we need to live in the light of. The other verse that I want that's guilt-free. The other verse I want to draw your attention to, Jesus was thinking of the potential of his people, thinking of what can come out of the relationship with him in the final weeks of his life. And in John 17, he says, he's talking with his father. He said, "These things I have spoken to you, that your children, that's you and I, might have my joy fulfilled in themselves." The barrier has been smashed, and now we are in a situation of joy, a situation of relief, a situation of extraordinary potential. And Jesus, in this chapter, drives this home in verse 35. "He who comes to me will never go hungry. He who believes in me will never be thirsty." Whatever that means, it creates that picture of security. It creates that picture of provision. It creates that picture of potential, doesn't it? "Whoever comes to me, I will never drive away." A relationship where there is no guilt. A relationship of security. A relationship of joy. That's what is meant by fulfillment. Fulfillment. Do you know, I'm so encouraged, and with this I conclude, with the picture of Peter. Peter in the New Testament was a disciple of Jesus, and he screwed up big time. He turned his back on Jesus when the going got tough. Peer pressure pushed him right away. Jesus meets him at a breakfast meeting by a lakeside. And he doesn't say to him, "What do you think you were playing at?" He doesn't say to him, "You're finished." He doesn't say to him, "I don't want to see you again." He actually says to him, "Feed my lambs, feed my sheep." Peter, who thought he'd lost that relationship, failed to realize that that relationship holds good. He never loses those that trust in him. And amazingly, instead of being put on probation, he's told to go and nourish other people. That relationship we have, we receive that food, we feed on Jesus, and then we share that wonderful life with others. Do you know, if you don't feel like that this morning, can I encourage you just to reflect on whether the physical side, the well-being, all that's important to us has just got in the way of that bigger picture of the feeding and the nourishment that comes from the bread of life. And I would also encourage you to take hold of that relationship, to live in the light of that security, to live in the light of that potential, to live in the light of that forgiveness. And then we as a family here can share the bread of life, the life in all its fullness, with others as well. Amen.